Welcome to Headlines of the Future, brought to you by Bayer. Fascinating clues to help solve some of the most pressing global challenges, from climate change to feeding a growing population to curing diseases, can be found through science and innovation. In each episode, we will seek answers as to what the future might look like and how it will transform our lives for the better. I'm your host, Pi, and in this podcast, we get to hear from visionary scientists, thought leaders, and change makers who are exploring how the science of today may positively impact our lives in the future. Today, we are discussing a very common disease that affects more than 10 million people worldwide, Parkinson's disease. We will uncover more around how it affects people and get into some of the current treatments available, and of course, look to the future, as our podcast title suggests, seeing how we may harvest the potential of cell therapy and gene therapy for a disease like Parkinson's. Today, I am joined by three brilliant experts within the area. So first off, Bayer's very own Patrick Busfeldt. Patrick is a trained physician with medical board certifications on neurology and restorative neurology. Patrick has been part of Team Bayer since 2008, and since then he has had roles of increasing responsibility within the medical affairs team at Bayer. Since 2021, he is the head of medical affairs for cell and gene therapies and ophthalmology. Next, we're joined by Christoph Bankowitz. Christoph is a world-renowned expert in neurorestorative medicine and an accomplished neurosurgeon with successful translation of multiple gene therapies into the clinic. He has both industry and academic experience, and he is an inventor of multiple patents. He has published nearly 250 peer-reviewed research articles and co-founded three companies. In addition, he serves in the newly appointed role of scientific chairperson for Parkinson's disease and multiple system atrophy at AskBio. And last but not least, we are joined by Ahmed Enaitala. Ahmed is a physician by training, and he has led and overseen the execution of several clinical stage rare disease programs. Ahmed is the head of development at Blue Rock Therapeutics. With more than 20 years of experience, Ahmed brings an in-depth expertise across the drug research and development spectrum. Both AskBio and Blue Rock Therapeutics are independently operated subsidiaries of Bayer. Welcome, gentlemen.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So why don't we get straight into it? Patrick, what is Parkinson's disease and how does it affect people?
Parkinson's is the most frequent motor neurodegenerative disorder, which usually happens from the 65 years on. It is dominated by motor problems. So patients who get Parkinson's have difficulty in initiating movements. They are getting very rigid in their movements and also experience stiffness. But Parkinson's is not only a motor disease, it also affects a variety of other body systems, such as the gastrointestinal tract, the mood. Also, cognitive impairment is a part of Parkinson's. So it's a disease which affects the whole patient, the whole person as such. Parkinson's is caused by a loss of neurons which produce dopamine in a certain area, which is called substantia nigra in the brain. And it affects mostly male, but also female. And there is no cure.
Thanks, Patrick. I really had no idea that it affected more than just movement. So really interested to learn a bit more. So Ahmed, why don't you walk me through what the current treatments look like?
Of course. And maybe it's important to keep in mind what Patrick just said, right? It's a neurodegenerative disease. It's progressive, which means the brain changes and the symptoms increase over time. Patients continue to lose dopaminergic neurons in that part of the brain, as Patrick mentioned, over time. By the time of diagnosis, they lose about 50% of such neurons. The reason this is important when we talk about treatment is that the gold standard in the treatment of Parkinson's disease remains to be around levodopa, which was studied and approved in the late 60s, early 70s. And the way it works, it really provides that key ingredient to the remaining surviving dopaminergic neurons in Parkinson's patients' brains to make more of the dopamine that they lose over time as the disease progresses. And then, and it works really well early on, but as the patients continue to lose more and more of such dopaminergic neurons, the effectiveness of such medications decreases over time, leaving the patients with longer durations of symptoms and greater severity of symptoms and greater impact on their lives. There are other types of medications. Some of them are also based on levodopa, different formulations, different routes of administration, which have been developed since, you know, the 60s. There are other non-dopaminergic medications, and it's not really a one-size-fits-all. Most patients require their own customized or tailored regimen, a mix of medications. But the premise for the medical treatment today is really to try and enhance the remaining or surviving neurons. And that can only work for so long. It gets to a point where there's not enough neurons for such medications to work as well. And that is the huge unmet need.
Huge unmet need indeed. Thank you, Ahmed. So, Ahmed, why don't you tell me a little bit more about your exposure to the disease?
I've seen patients, but it's not the same as being close to someone who suffered or suffers from, honestly, neurodegenerative diseases in general, not just Parkinson's. And I've seen that in the family. I've seen that, you know, with close friends. It's very hard to describe the impact on patients who have Parkinson's or diseases like that. And I've seen how it changes their lives and how it changes, you know, people close to them. You know, it's not just the patient when you think about it. I have close friends. Their entire life was upside down. Everything changed because their dad, for example, had, you know, the disease came to a point where he was being more dependent, required more care. Their decisions, like everyday decisions, right, that we make and take for granted is very different when you're in a situation like this. So it's hard, right? And it's certainly one of the motivations for many of us to work in that field. And the biggest of all is when patients get the diagnosis and slowly and eventually realize the trajectory and understanding and knowing that there's not much that can be done, and they will get to that point where, you know, most treatments will lose effectiveness. It is hard.
Thank you for sharing that, Ahmed. It is indeed one of those diseases where, you know, I've personally seen family members suffer from. It must be so frustrating, you know, looking to the fact that there is currently no cure. That is the hardest part. And that's why it's important that we have discussions like this to shine a spotlight on the significance of this research. So, Christoph, you've recently been appointed the scientific chairperson for Parkinson's and MSA at AskBio. I'm particularly interested with that. What has been your personal experience with the disease?
Yes, thank you for this question. So I've been in this field for long enough to have met many, many people that were affected by this disease. And it's really sad to see how they all progress, although maybe at different speed, so to speak. It really is a one-way street, if you will, for someone that's been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. And, you know, we've all heard about, you know, a lot of very famous people that succumbed to the disease. And unfortunately, as Ahmed has mentioned, there isn't really anything to prevent the progression of the disease. And in fact, there's only one thing that has been shown statistically to have some impact on this, and it's not a pharmaceutical agent, it's exercise. So that perhaps gives you a little bit of context of how desperate we are to find something to really affect the progression of the disease.
Thanks, Christoph. So, Patrick, why don't you walk me through what has been your direct exposure to patients with this disease?
Yeah, sure. As a neurologist, I worked for over 3 years in a specialized Parkinson's unit, and I was treating the Parkinson's patients. So when they came very early, and then also in, as Christoph and Ahmed also pointed out, actually accompanied them through this one-way road, where you could see patients initially not quite grasping what it was all about, getting medication, everything went well. So they started, this is called the honeymoon phase, where they don't really care about Parkinson's and it's just taking their medicine. And then gradually you see how they decline, not over 3 years. That usually takes a little bit longer, but you can see also certainly how the disease advances. And then more and more medication gets added. And then the side effects of the medications kick in. And patients get, and this has been described also by Ahmed and Christoph already, they get severe side effects from the medication, so-called dyskinesias, where these are involuntary movements who make also social functioning very difficult for these patients. And then also up to the point where they get severe dystonias, which means they really have their limbs really in distorted situations where you can't move anymore, where you need treatment with botulinum toxin. And then until the final stage, like this is the last resort, then discussing the deep brain stimulation. So it's quite a journey. I've seen many of them also in the very late phases. And that was really times, as also described by Ahmed, it was heartbreaking to see how also the family and also close people to the patients really got into despair because they couldn't handle the situation anymore. So therefore, when I heard that we're embarking on this new journey and really trying to open new perspectives for Parkinson's patients with gene and with cell therapies, that was so exciting that I said, well, get on it. This is for a very good cause, and I'm extremely happy to work with these very gifted and also very engaged colleagues here.
Thank you, Patrick. And, you know, thank you to the three of you for your commitment to really finding better solutions for the future. So as we look to the future, let's get into cell and gene therapy and what the potential truly is. So the first question, Ahmed, probably to you, is around the idea of cell therapies. So that goes back a long time in history, beginning with blood transfusions almost a century ago. How would you briefly describe the evolution of cell therapies and how it's been experienced over the last 100 years?
You mentioned blood transfusion, and I think starting from there, maybe it's simple to explain. In the case of someone losing blood or blood cells, a way to treat it is to produce the blood cells from someone else that is compatible, that can live in the patient who's in need, in transfusing that blood or blood cell components to the patient. So this maybe can think about it as the simplest form. But it then becomes very complicated if you're trying to replace other types of cells in the body for a number of reasons. Where to obtain the cells from, how do you make sure you're replacing the right type of cell, and all of that. So a lot of work went into this, and it's based on, in a large part, on stem cells. And stem cells, these are cells that are made by the body to really differentiate into any type of cell required. So from early on, you can think about it as the foundation of life itself, right? Where in the embryo, stem cells, which are unspecialized, so they don't have any specific function yet, and they can self-renew and divide as needed, they are the foundation of the formation of the whole body. So they essentially differentiate into all the organs and tissues that humans have as they develop. And once that change happens, it's permanent. So cells which become a heart, they cannot go back into becoming a stem cell. Some residual stem cells stay. So some of that, you know, original reservoir stays in some parts of the body, and it helps to repair or provide additional cells when needed. But that's not the case for all parts of the body. For example, the heart generally does not regenerate. If it's injured, if cells are lost in the heart, we can't get them back. So in degenerative diseases where there's loss of certain cells or certain tissue, one approach is to replace them. And now we can do that because of the advances in the stem cell space. We can use stem cells, and now we have the technology to make any type of cell from stem cells and inject it or put it where it's needed. So in the case of Parkinson's, we know the exact type of cell lost in Parkinson's disease. And we know the place, the relevant part of the brain that's impacted. And we can use stem cells and differentiate them into that very specific cell type that is lost. So now, if we can take the cells that we can make because of the technology and the cutting-edge science that we're enjoying today, and implant them in the relevant parts of the brain, and then the new cells would connect and become part of the circuitry, that network, and help restore the biology that is disturbed because of loss of such neurons. That is stem cell or cell therapy in a nutshell.
Oh, that's super clear. Thank you, Ahmed. So, Christoph, similar question around gene therapy. What does it really mean and how does it work?
Gene therapy should be viewed as the medicine of the future. Why am I saying this? Because in this particular concept, we can deliver a therapeutic into the body of a patient, in this case specifically into the brain, just once. Instead of taking pills, you can use this technology to bring a therapeutic substance that should have a very long-lasting effect. Now, with the evolution of genomics, in other words, the way how we can identify missing genes in people, right? So now we know the genome, we know what we would consider to be a norm, and then we can correlate quite specifically right now specific genetic mutation to a disease. This technology allows us to address that very question, that we can actually identify the missing protein within the brain of the patient, and then use the technology where we put in the tiny little particles, which are derived from viruses, a message. And that message is transcribed within the specific region of the patient brain to make the missing substance. Very critical concept that I think it's specifically pronounced in Parkinson's disease is the fact that brain is incredibly specialized. So that's a very important concept as well.
Thank you, Christoph. That is really an incredible potential. And speaking of potential, Patrick, we often hear that the cell therapies and gene therapies offer this massive paradigm shift. And I think both Christoph and Ahmed have walked us through that. How can they particularly help in the case of Parkinson's?
Yeah, as Ahmed also earlier explained, as there are neurons in the brain of Parkinson's patients who degenerate, so the neurons get less and less and less. The approach with medication up to now was we give external dopamine into the brain, and that helps the remaining neurons to work in so-called motor loops to actually help the body move or the patient move their limbs. But as the neurons get less and less and less, the external dopamine helps less and less because the so-called motor loops do not work anymore. So the exciting opportunity is now with cell therapy to actually inject cells into the brain. And here they have the potential actually to form new loops with the old neurons and actually to produce dopamine to help to maintain these so-called motor loops, which then help the patient to move again normal without any rigidity, without any shaking hands. That's one part. And the good thing is here, while we hope that via this internal dopamine production, we don't have the fluctuations anymore that are also caused with the application of external dopamine, with medication that gives the patient external dopamine, but rather more to have a potential to have a constant dopaminergic level in the brain. With gene therapy, the hope is that the therapy, which is actually a gene which is brought to neuronal cells, that codes for a self-healing factor of the brain. And this self-healing factor is called glial-derived nerve growth factor. But this nerve growth factor, which is then produced by the neurons in the brain, helps the brain heal itself. So while we are injecting new cells with the cell therapy, with gene therapy, we help the remaining neurons to heal themselves and to reconnect again better and to again form these motor loops, which then help the patient again to move normally.
Thank you, Patrick, for walking us through this. The possibilities are certainly very exciting to think about. But before moving on, let me just remind our listeners that these therapy candidates are still being evaluated and in the early stages of clinical trials. So how close are we to harvesting that potential? Ahmed?
Sure. Specifically for Parkinson's, there is a lot of progress that has been made over the past maybe 20 or 30 years. There are a number of studies attempting to use foreign tissue to transplant in patients' brains with the hope that the dopamine from that external tissue will help restore the function of that part of the brain. And we learned a lot from that. And then came animal models with the ability to make dopaminergic cells, the cells lost in Parkinson's, and put them in animal models of Parkinson's disease and look at the effect. And a lot of progress there in terms of understanding how the cells work and the possibility of taking that into human clinical trials. And now we are at a stage where we actually have human clinical studies where we put dopaminergic cells derived from stem cells surgically implanted in brains of Parkinson's patients. We have enough information to go to the next stage of development. In other words, late stage studies such as phase 2 and phase 3. So to be clear, there's a lot of work to be done. I mean, this remains to be investigational and it remains to be highly challenging. We're combining some of the most difficult diseases in terms of drug development, neurodegenerative diseases in general, and Parkinson's in particular, with a brand new modality that is, you know, we're trying to figure out how to actually develop something like that in untreatable diseases. So there's a lot of work, but the motivation is there, understanding the unmet need and the impact and the hope we can bring to patients is there. So we made a lot of progress, but there's a lot of work remaining.
Thank you, Ahmed. So Christoph, over to you for gene therapies.
It's an ongoing struggle. And what I mean by that is that there are a lot of unknowns and a lot of variables that we have to address. Incredibly helpful that this technology is going to evolve into a viable treatment for patients with Parkinson's disease. So based on this, we are looking into the future now with trying to prove that this therapy can actually have a long-lasting therapeutic effect in patients. It'll take us up to probably 5 years to really get to that stage, but we are very grateful for the support we're getting from Bayer and being able to conduct this type of very complicated clinical trial. I have great hopes for Parkinson's disease. I'm directly involved in other gene therapy programs in which we have been able to demonstrate very profound effects of this technology on changing lives of patients with a similar disease. It's just in children where we have a gene mutation and that has really showed us the way how we can affect the patients with Parkinson's disease as well. So stay tuned.
Thank you, Christoph. And that progress is really valuable. And I'm really excited to see what the future looks like. So speaking of future, I'm going to ask the most fundamental question around this podcast, which is, if you were to look to the future, so let's throw out a year there, let's say 2050, what would the headline be around Parkinson's disease in relation to cell and gene therapy? So I'm going to start with you, Patrick, and then you can pass that down the line.
Okay, so if I was in dreamland and I would imagine what I would like to read, then I would like to read is Bayer, AskBayer and BlueRock have succeeded in helping Parkinson's patients to overcome their disease. So that's something I would like to read.
Thank you, Patrick. Very aspirational. Christoph, what about you?
Well, if we're talking bald, I would say gene therapy brings Parkinson's to its knees. In other words, we would have patients which can manage the disease for decades, so it becomes a benign disease. I don't want to dream that we're going to cure anything. This is probably outside of the scope of our technology right now, but I think converting Parkinson's into a more benign disease would be great.
Thank you, Christoph. Ahmed, what about you?
I didn't come up with this. I heard it once, but I like it, and it's provocative. But Parkinson's Foundation closes due to lack of patience.
That is the dream. That is the dream. Thank you, Ahmed. And thank you to all three of you for this fascinating discussion.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I would like to thank all three of you for the critical work that you are doing to address this unmet need. And although there's still a long way to go, based on what we've heard here today, I think we can all be excited by the potential of cell and gene therapy, so thank you for that. I would also like to take the opportunity to thank our audience for listening to Headlines of the Future. I really hope that you found this conversation as educational as I did. If you want to learn more about the science and innovations that help address some of the most pressing global challenges, make sure to visit Bayer.com or subscribe. Tune in to previous episodes available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you may get your podcasts. And remember, if you enjoyed this, please share it with others, leave us a rating and review. Thanks again for joining us, and we hope to see you in the future.